Okay, welcome back. Lots going on, as usual. Florida, interesting. Broward County is suggesting that all families who have visitors in their homes wear masks. The mayor of Miami, Mr. Suarez, said that cases within households are the largest category of coronavirus outbreak sources in the city right now, and contagion between family members is the most common way for the virus to spread. So he's suggesting that families wear masks at home. It's going to cause a lot of controversy down there, for sure. We'll see how it plays out. And there's a ton of stuff. And it used to be, as I said, that news stories, news cycles would last for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Now they last for a half a day, if that. Mel Gibson recovers from coronavirus after hospitalization. Didn't even know he was sick. Trump and Betsy DeVos are downplaying the risks of reopening the schools, claiming children don't spur transmission of the virus. And there's a fact check from ABC News on that that position. So there you go. The usual things are just all over the Western world, all over the world. Photo of Fauci at the ball game without wearing his mask. So a lot of people on Twitter were not happy with that. Fauci says his family is receiving serious threats due to his, what is being called, his COVID agenda. All right, let's see what else we got here. Two more Florida mayors have urged residents, they can't order them, they've urged them to wear masks in the home. Well, we'll see. All right, so it's all over the map. There's no cohesion, there's no national leadership, we know that, we're not going to get any. It's just, it is what it is, and we've got to study it in that light. Henry, welcome back. What did you do today? Did you have fun today? What did you do today?
Actually, I got data for a boots on the ground report. So, I'm gonna address school openings and provide some data that brand new data today, and double checking on my theory as to why there was an explosion of COVID cases in the northern suburbs of Pittsburgh today. And it was a day unlike any other. And,
are they blaming you for it? I hope not.
Well, actually, I can't find any news stories on it. So far, I think, you know, prior to today, this would have probably fallen into the rumor category. There have been rumors of these cases, and because a lot of people, you know, obviously tested positive, and word kind of spread via rumor. But it came out in today's report, you know, the Allegheny County's report today. And, you know, the way these reports go, you know, they don't really tell you what it was the prior day. If you're not keeping track of it, you just know what the totals are as of that day. But I've been keeping track. I got a spreadsheet for a lot of the locations in Allegheny County, and they exploded today in the northern suburbs. And I was going to go through exactly
how did you find out, Henry, if it didn't make the news? What? Tell us about your boots. I don't want names, but how did you find out?
Well, the boots were mine.
That's called research.
Allegheny County has its own website, and it's got an interactive map. And the map basically has Allegheny County divided up into, I don't know what the exact total is, but probably 100 different communities. And they update it each day. And the they not only update the total for the county, they update the total for each of the 100 communities in the county. And as I said, all you get at it on a given day is what the total is to date. So if you're not keeping track of what they were the prior day, you don't really know how much they go up in that particular neighborhood that day. But you know what the total is so far for the pandemic. And so I've been keeping a spreadsheet on about, I don't know how many, probably 30-something communities that, well, let's see how it actually is more than that. I got 51 communities. So I got about probably about half of the communities, mostly in the area where I am, to get an idea on what's going on there. And I think I mentioned the other day that when Deborah Burks had been caught on recorded what she was saying to various governors and other officials, were that there were 11, actually I saw the list, I'm pretty sure there were 12, media reports said 11, but in any event, one of the 11 or 12 communities that he said was generating dramatic increases was the Pittsburgh area. And so, you know, the numbers have been going up in Pittsburgh in general, most of which are in Allegheny County, the increases. And there were, you know, a couple days where half of the cases in Pennsylvania were in Allegheny County. And that's, you know, unusual because Pennsylvania is a big state. And even though parts of it are rural, actually most of it's rural, the two big cities are Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And generally there's more people living in the Philadelphia metropolitan area than the Pittsburgh metropolitan area. And there's a lot of counties in the eastern part of Pennsylvania that kind of border New Jersey and New York. And so they're densely populated and, they would be competing with Allegheny County to you know, how many cases they had. And it has appeared somewhat unevenly that when New York had all their cases, eastern Pennsylvania, including Philadelphia and suburban Philadelphia, had a lot of cases. And there weren't that many in the Pittsburgh area. And then recently, the numbers started to go up in the Pittsburgh area. They haven't really gone up that much in eastern Pennsylvania. So that's part of the reason that it ended up having a high percentage of the cases. But today was very dramatic. Like I say, I've been monitoring these. I've been recording it probably for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And today, the areas around where I am to kind of feed in my local high school, they jumped very dramatically. And it wasn't just the school. It was basically most of the schools in the northern suburbs of Pittsburgh. And they all had these dramatic jumps today. You know, it wasn't like it was that much activity. There was activity. They would go up one or two each day. And then all of a sudden they're going up 10 or 20 today. And the boots on the ground is an explanation for this dramatic rise. And well, I already started to tell the story, so I might as well finish the story. I was going to do a lead into it. But anyway, it addresses one of the areas. The last thing Trump talked about in his briefing yesterday, he didn't do a briefing today.
He was tired. He had to rest.
No, I think he was tired. He wasn't tired. He knew that, A, it wasn't working. and B, I think it was designed to kind of lead up to him saying, we got to open the schools. And then he included the fact that there wasn't going to be a convention in Jacksonville. And I think that he might have a problem with the next briefing because it's still not clear what the Republicans are going to do about their convention. You know, whether they're just going to do something in South Carolina and Charlotte, or whether they're going to do it mostly just, you know, video conference stuff, how much they're going to do in person. And I think at the next briefing, they're going to ask, well, what's going on? If you're not doing it in Jacksonville, where are you doing it? And is it going to be in person, or is it going to be mm-hmm. video, or da, da, da? And I don't think he has a clue. I mean, I don't even know how easily he can go back to North Carolina after saying that, you know, we're moving it. I mean, they were going to do something in North Carolina, but they weren't, you know, his acceptance was going to be in Florida, and now it's not going to be in Florida. And I have a feeling that part of it was, I mean, he rejects a lot. So before he said that they weren't going to have it in Florida, he talked about how everybody wanted to come and da 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 da. So since he emphasized how much everybody wanted to come, that probably indicated that a lot of people weren't going to come. And six senators had already announced that they weren't going to be attending in person. And several other senators said, well, they're going to reserve, you know, their options, you know, keep their options open. They hadn't really decided. And my guess is they kind of looked at what was going on in Florida, and a lot of these guys are octogenarians or septuagenarians. They're 70, 80 years old. Mm-hmm. And the idea of going to Florida for a convention in person and have thousands of people packed into wherever wasn't that appealing. And so the combination of representatives saying they weren't going to attend and Floridians saying, please don't come. We don't need to bring in more people that could be infected to our state. We've got enough problems already. That mm-hmm. kind of led to his announcement of the cancellation. And I don't think they've got a plan B worked out yet. So, you know, if he held a briefing, they'd say, well, you know, when is the convention? Where is the convention? And is it in person? And who are some of the representatives not going to attend? And I don't think he wanted to answer any of those questions. So I think that might be part of it. But anyway, he did kind of close with, you know, we need to open the schools, and, you know, so it might open a couple of weeks late. And I think he was asked whether his son was going to go to school. And I believe the answer is no. So he probably didn't want to get that question again. So Barron's not going to attend anything in person. And Jared's kids are not going to be attending in person. Their school says online only.
Thing, huh?
So, yeah. So, you know, the more questions he gets, the stickier it gets to come up with answers, because they can ask some pretty pointed and specific questions. And his answers aren't going to really fly that well. So, in any event, getting back to schools opening, the boots on the ground story was that these different school districts, or, you know, areas where the schools in suburban Philadelphia are, at least northern suburban, reported dramatic jumps today. And the one that I did the boots on the ground for was Fox Chapel. And
What is Fox Chapel?
It's an area in suburban Pittsburgh. It's for the families that actually have kids in school. They're a high percentage of them are either doctors or academics, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center or at or the university.
I'm trying to get an image of this. There's Henry out there with his dark glasses and hat on, lurking up and down the streets, taking notes.
Well,
lucky you weren't arrested.
It doesn't require that much, you know, lurking. The school's relatively convenient, is always open. You can go and jog around the track and do bleachers and stuff. So I visit it periodically. And actually, I visit it probably daily. And I kind of see the progress. They went, you know, they're planning on opening the schools, and they basically, you know, redid all the roads and all the parking lots and put in new curbs and put in new training and resurfaced it. And they, right now, they're just kind of putting the lines on the parking spaces. They're pretty much done. They've been doing that for, well, they started doing it actually when school was still in session, and then they had to stop when everything got shut down, and they started it several weeks ago. So, it was a couple of weeks ago that the signs went up on all the doors, and the signs basically said, wear a mask and maintain 6 feet distance and help us fight the virus together. You know, and that went up on virtually every door that you could get into the school from the outside. So each store had a little sign. And the key was on July 13th, they put up little notices, and they said, sign in and fever check at the artificial turf field for all athletes.
And that was
the beginning of the preseason, and it literally was 11 days ago. And when I saw the sign, I figured, well, this is the beginning of the end of the fall season, because there is already some activity in Allegheny County, and there was zero doubt in my mind that when they did their fever checks of the athletes, they were going to get a significant number of positives. And they were going to tell those athletes that, well, you can't practice until you get a test to find out if you got COVID. And I don't know if they're administering the test. I'm guessing that, frankly, I don't know. I don't know if the school's got a, you know, doctors that they're going to use, or whether they just tell them to use their own doctors. And you need to bring, you know, a test result back to actually start practicing to show us you're negative. And if you're positive, you got to quarantine and probably require them to take another test when they're done quarantining, so they're negative, and they have to bring that in. The bottom line is that the result of the fever check would undoubtedly put the school on notice that they have a serious problem. And I'm guessing that the schools in suburban Pittsburgh are all pretty much on the same schedule. And so the first day of school, I think they had orientation scheduled for August 20th, and I think the first day of school was shortly thereafter. And probably the schools throughout, you know, all the schools that are in the same conference, essentially, are going to have the same schedule. And they probably all have the same day for first day practice. And it was probably July 13th for all of them. And so July 13th is when they, I'm sure, all had the same policies that Fox Chapel had, which was you got to do a fever check and make sure that there's no fever of any of the players that are going onto the field.
Mm-hmm.
And they found a lot of kids in these other school districts, and they told them exactly the same thing. And I think the timing is just about right that, you know, they got identified 11 days ago, and then they went to the doctor, and then they got a COVID test, and then they got the results, and then the positives got reported to the Allegheny County Department of Health, and the Allegheny County Department of Health put them into their systems, and then they showed up today. And that's why they had these dumps. I mean, they're divided up. The borough of Fox Chapel is feeds into the school system, and they had been pretty steady on their numbers. And, you know, for the last week, they had 23, 23, 24, 24, 24, 24.
You're repeating yourself, Henry.
Uh-huh. Right. That was the total for each day. No new cases. You know, one new case a week ago, nothing after that. And 34 today, 10 cases reported today. And O'Hara feeds into the same school district and the same thing, 30, 31, 31, 33, 33, 33, 45 today, 12 cases today. And actually, the different communities that feed into this one school system actually had 30 positives today. So there were 30 positive for one school district. And it was the same thing in these other regions that would feed into the same conference and probably on exactly the same schedule. And the exact same thing happened. That, you know, they had cases, and they get one this day and one that day, and they would creep up a little bit. And then all of a sudden, they had 10 to 15 cases today. And so I haven't really seen an explanation as to what happened today in the northern suburbs of Pittsburgh, but I do know that they had increases in between 10 to 20 cases that happened today in areas that have been reporting one or two per day, and most of them weren't even that much. They were one or two per week, and then all of a sudden today they had 10 or 15. So I think this happened all across the Pittsburgh area, and it all happened today because that's how long it took for them to actually get the results and release the results from what happened when they started opening up the preseason for the football and soccer and track teams to start getting ready for the new school year.
All right. So you're getting an increase in cases. What do we think is going to happen?
We're getting an explosion. You're getting an explosion of cases. Well, right now, they I can tell you Fox Chapel. I'm guessing they all did kind of the same thing. They they sent out questionnaires to the students or the parents of the students, and asking, you know, whether they would want to attend in class or online, and, you know, whether they'd need bus service, and kind of just fill out the questionnaire to know what was out there, you know, how many of the students were going to do sign up for, you know, remote learning or in class learning. And then I think there's a meeting scheduled for August 10th or something to kind of give the results and they essentially what they're doing. So I think that right now, most of the students don't know exactly what's happening. You know, they don't know this result. And so they're voting on this. But I would think that between now and August 10th, that these numbers, you know, it may not be a one-shot deal. Today may be the first day, and then, you know, there'll be similar increases of 5 or 10 at each of these areas each day. And, you know, by next week, you know, there might be, instead of 30 in this one school district, there might be 100.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to realize that there's a lot of virus floating around. And the first day of school, they're literally going to have dozens, if not hundreds, of positives checking in. And there's no way that they're going to safely open the school. That all they're going to do is start a local epidemic because the virus is just going to take off, even if they are wearing masks. And, and not only are the students going to be at risk, but the faculty is going to be at risk and the maintenance people are going to be at risk. And my guess is that by the time they get around to this meeting on August 10th, it's going to be clear to not only the people having the meeting, but the parents and the students and the teachers,
right,
that there's a serious problem here. And then everybody will say, well, you know, I was thinking of in class, but on second thought, I want to do remote. And they're going to realize that they're not going to, if they open the school, they'll have it closed within a month. And, you know, all these teams that are getting ready for sports.
I hope they don't blame
you
for this explosion.
They're not going to do any sports. And they're going to have problems, you know, just having enough teachers to actually teach the in-class, because the teachers aren't going to want to do it. They're going to say, you know, they've got X percentage of the students
are
positive.
When is this discovery you've made going to make the news? It's obviously not made it yet.
Well, today was the day that that these numbers jumped. Now they didn't look that bad overall. I mean, they looked bad, but they've been bad. I mean, there were just under 200 new cases today for Allegheny County. And
right,
that's not a record. A little bit earlier last week, I think they got up to 300. They got over 300. And they've had other days where it's gotten up to 200, and it's been above 100 for many days in a row, probably for a couple of weeks now. So today wasn't a day that stood out if you just looked at the total, but it did stand out if you looked at the difference in where they were, and most of these big jumps were in the northern suburbs. And that's because I think that's when they started with the preseason. So, you know, like I said, this is one day in a row. So I don't know if it's going to be 10, 20 cases per day for the next days going forward. It's usually, you know, low over the weekend. So I don't know if it's going to show up that much this weekend, but it may very well show up next week. And so if they're adding 10 or 20 cases a day versus one or two, and that continues for a couple days next week, you know, somebody's going to get wind of it. They're going to say,
sure,
you know, what happened? What happened? You know, Fox Sample had 20 cases last week, and now all of a sudden they got 40 cases, doubled in 4 days. You know, how did that happen? Because the 20, you know, is the total going all the way back to March or April. You know, it took a long time to get 20. It took a short time to get 20 more. So I think that the rumors will certainly start. I mean, I've already heard some of the rumors that so-and-so was sick and so-and-so was sick. And the people that are sick, that I hear the rumors about, these aren't, you know, nursing homes. These are not, you know, elderly. These are generally people that are 20, 30 years old. These are younger people. And you know, there was one report that came out for Allegheny County and said, well, they're dumping cases were due to younger people going to bars or going to beach communities. A lot of them go to like Myrtle Beach and, you know, a little bit further south, but on the ocean, and they got a lot of timeshares and stuff, and they typically...
How far away is that from where you are, Myrtle Beach?
Myrtle Beach is, I don't know, I think it's ballpark 5-6 hours kind of drive. I mean, it's not right next door, but it's a popular place. And there's been a lot of activity, a lot of cases in Myrtle Beach. And and so it's just, you know, these beach communities, you know, in North Carolina, South Carolina type, and those are kind of popular places that far enough south so it's warmer and not so far that, you know, it's a extremely long drive. So it's reachable, and, you know, I think it's 5-6 hours or so. And so the bottom line is the virus is in Pittsburgh. Deborah Brooks has already made the announcement that Pittsburgh and Cleveland were two of the communities among these 11 or 12. And, and it's been said, you know, the ones that they're worried about are, you know, California, Florida, and Texas. And, California moved up to number one in the country. It displaced New York. New York went down to number two. Mm-hmm. And next week, both Florida and Texas are going to pass New York. So New York's going to be down to number four because they're really not adding that many cases. They might be adding, you know, between 500 and 1,000 per day, whereas California, Florida, and Texas are adding pretty close to 10,000 a day. Actually, today Florida added 12,000. So they're, each of them are in the 10,000 range, whereas New York's in the less than 1,000 range. So they're picking up 10,000 on them every day, and both Florida and Texas are going to pass. And Deborah said that, well, it's kind of like having three New Yorks at once. It's how she characterized. She said that today. That's right. She said that today. And just to clarify, when Trump gave his briefings this week, for the first couple, they asked where Deborah was. And she said, oh, she's in the hall. She's nearby, not, you know, I'll bring her in and you can ask her questions, and she's nearby. And today she came into the room and she kind of, you know, just sat on the side and didn't say a word. And if you recall, that's exactly what happened when Trump decided to talk about spraying Lysol into your lungs and figure out how you can get a UV light in your body. And she didn't say anything then either, but she didn't look real happy. And the TV cameras really were focusing on her expression. She was wearing a mask, but you could kind of see that she was trying to hide because she didn't want to answer any questions about this. And Trump was, you know, standing there going on and on about how great this was, that you can kill the virus. All you got to do is figure out how to get a UV light in your body or get some Lysol in your lungs. And So, in any event, the thing that stood out about his briefing is nobody else talked. I mean, he did the whole thing. Nobody was really in the room that much, you know, other than the reporters. But he brought a few in today. Or, I'm sorry, yesterday. He didn't bring anybody in today because there wasn't a briefing. But in any event, this kind of goes to what I was saying regarding opening up the schools, is that there is no way you can open up schools in areas that have a high level of virus without getting the virus into the schools and spreading in the schools with or without masks.
Sure.
And it's somewhat akin, you know, if you recall what happened with the swine flu. And the swine flu, you know, the CDC knew that they weren't going to be able to control the swine flu because it was a flu, and they flu transmit pretty easily. And there was no way they were going to keep that virus from spreading, especially when it started in Mexico, and the first cases were reported in Southern California. And it quickly started popping up at a lot of different schools from students that had gone on spring break down to Mexico and been infected. And so it kind of popped up in the springtime at various locations, and it spread enough that it was declared a pandemic. And they knew that in the fall, when they started school, that it was going to spread. It had already, you know, infected a few schools in the spring, and it had affected several camps, summer camps over the summer. And there was little doubt that it was going to spread in the schools, and they really weren't going to be able to control it unless they closed the schools. Mm-hmm. But it was a somewhat different situation with the swine flu, because if you recall, seasonal flu at the beginning of 2009 had developed Tamiflu resistance. So the seasonal flu was a problem. The Tamiflu didn't work on it anymore. The resistance was approaching 100%. And when the swine flu came along, it basically displaced the seasonal flu. And in fact, by the fall, it displaced H3N2 also. So the only influenza A that was really circulating by the fall was swine flu. And since it replaced the other two flus, didn't really have them. And swine flu, the older populations that had some immunity to it because it was H1N1. And when they were
that's a long time old immunity. It wasn't recent. They've had it.
Yeah. Well, they had seasonal H1N1 when they were growing up. So they already had that, whereas H3N2 kind of came up after that, and they were more susceptible to it. So H3N2 would kill those over 65 at much higher frequencies than H1N1. And with the swine flu, the older population had some immunity to it. So they did, and some of them had been immunized against an outbreak at Fort Dix in 1976. And that was also H1N1. And that was even closer to this swine flu that came in 2009. So people that got vaccinated in 1976 had some immunity from a vaccine, a swine flu vaccine, in addition to, you know, having had the virus when they were forming their memory cells and immunity. So the bottom line was, back in 2009, the number of serious cases wasn't, you know, that high because the elderly had some immunity to it. It did affect, you know, those that were 30 to 40 years old. There were certainly more fatalities in that range.
Right.
But it wasn't as dramatic as it is for COVID. And it you know, didn't necessarily produce a whole lot of unknown because it still was influenza and it still was H1N1 and part of the, and even though the general population didn't have that much immunity to swine H1N1, they had some immunity to seasonal H1N1, and there was cross reactivity that mitigated the effects. So the virus spread fairly efficiently, and you know, it was a pandemic, didn't go away. Swine flu is still around. In fact, that has replaced seasonal H1N1, which is gone now. And so the two major influenza A's that are circulating is H3N2 and swine H1N1. And that, you know, if you get a vaccine, that's what's in the vaccine. And basically that's been circulating ever since 2009. Unlike Trump's misconception that pandemics don't go away. You know, epidemics go away, but pandemics go away. So his prediction that COVID is just going to go away is based on his fantasy and misunderstanding of the science. It's not based on any scientific fact. The only way COVID is going to go away is going to get replaced by another SARS-CoV-2 or, you know, maybe SARS-CoV-3. But if it goes away, it's because there's going to be another SARS coronavirus that replaced it. It isn't going away because Trump said it would, or that he's going to be
so
right.
So we're looking at 3.0 potentially. So whatever.
Well, 2.0 is still the first wave. You know, eventually, it might be a decade down the road. In the near term, the virus that's causing the pandemic isn't going anywhere. I mean, I kind of went through this for flu. The shortest lived virus from flu was the 1957 pandemic. That was H2N2, and then the H2 got replaced by H3. It kept the same N2 in 68. So that one, you know, was around for 11 years. That's short. You know, H1N1 started in 1918, and it didn't go away until 1957. Mm-hmm. And the one in H3N2 was in 1968, and that hasn't gone anywhere. That's still around. It got knocked down in 2009, but it bounced back in 2010, and it's around. It's the same H3N2 that you know, started in 1968. So they don't go away. They may get replaced by another version of the same virus, but pandemics don't go away, you know, no matter what Trump thinks. He's just clueless. I mean, he's talking about SARS, which was an epidemic. That one went away. But the SARS is a pandemic in 2019 is not going anywhere. It's going to produce a new wave for most of the world in the fall. So, in any event, the boots on the ground was actually seeing the science going up. When the preseason began, although that's been publicly known that the preseason began July 13th, and seeing the signs about getting a fever check. And the fever check was going to lead to identifying positive cases and to take 11 days to get that and get that into the county health is about right. So I think that these explosions of cases today was due to the start of the preseason, and those numbers are just going to go up. The preseason, when they're talking about masks, they're talking about masks during school. There's nobody wearing masks in the scrimmages right now, except, you know, the instructors might, but the players are not wearing. They actually put their helmets on for the first time today. So football's got to the helmet level and started to do some scrimmaging, and those scrimmages are going to increase. And long before school opens, they're going to have serious issues on the football squad, and the same thing's going to happen with soccer and track. And so, you know, the ones that opt to do the in-person learning, they're probably going to do fever checks on them, and they're going to see that the situation in August is significantly worse than the situation in July. And if people opted to go inside, I'm sure the teachers will realize by then, probably significantly before that, because I'm sure these rumors are going to spread on what's going on. And I'm not even sure they'll open, period. But if they do, I give them a month at the outside. And that's going to get repeated over and over. That's going to be all the schools in the Pittsburgh area, and probably all the schools in the Cleveland area. All of these cities that are not in the South, these are in the North, and they're showing signs of starting to increase already. And open up schools.
We only have a couple minutes. What are you hearing about rural penetration of the virus? What are you hearing? And rural. They're talking a week or two ago that the rural U.S. was next to be hit. True? Did it happen? Or is it happening? What about the people who are living away from the
areas? It's true, it's going to happen. I can tell you that the sequences from the virus that's in, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa area, that's done by one of the universities up there. Uh-huh. It's all the Italian strain. And it's been circulating there, for a couple of months now.
Right.
And there's no reason that same Italian strain is not going to spread in the small town. Some of the towns aren't that small, and a lot of them have, meat processing plants, and they're, a source for the virus, and they've got this, this Italian version, which is throughout the U.S. now, Oklahoma is getting up there. They basically had in Tulsa. Tulsa had plenty of cases. And, that's relatively rural. I mean, if you go through the numbers, let's see, what was Oklahoma for today? Oklahoma wasn't that high. They had, 314 new cases today. But Kansas had 1,000 today, so that'll give you an idea. Kansas is kind of in that category, so they got up to 1,000. Wisconsin had 1,000 today. Pennsylvania had 1,200 today. They're not all in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh had 200 of them. So outside of Pittsburgh, there still were 1,000 cases of Pennsylvania today. Illinois had 1,600 today. So it's not just in the South. I mean, in the South, they had their fair share. I mean, Louisiana had 2,000. Georgia had 5,000 today. Tennessee had 2,100. North Carolina had 2,100. Missouri had 1,400. So the virus is spreading out geographically. And that's what I said. The difference between this initial one, which is the Herald wave, is it kind of bounces around from one area to the other. It's not hitting all the areas at once. When it gets around to the
Herald wave? Is that what we are in now?
The U.S. is.
Yeah.
Everybody else is over their Herald wave, and they're kind of waiting for the next shoe to drop. See what's going to happen in the fall. So they basically got their cases. They locked things down. The cases dropped down to baseline or close to it. Mm-hmm. They started opening things up, and it started creeping up, and they're trying to, contact trace and keep it under control. So, much of the rest of the world has are done with the Herald phase. The U.S. expanding it still. But it can just morph into that. And
very creative. All right.
And that's what we think.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
Have a good weekend. It'll be an exciting week, I'm sure.
Boots on the ground. We like that. All right. Be well.
Take care.
All right, Dr. Henry Nyman, Ph.D., and that's our program tonight and for the week. Thank you for being here. You know where you can find us for news around the clock, and we'll be right back with you Monday. Best of coming up on Sunday, and tune in on the network. You'll find something running all day and all night. All right, be back soon. Be well and take care.